legal rights.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be focusing on estate planning and, in particular, advanced health directives. We'll also be talking about estate planning when a family is faced with a potential medical crisis. My guest is Linda Kramer, Chair of the Estate Planning Trust and Probate Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She's a partner in the Los Altos law firm of Kramer Radin. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies the following 11 fields of law: estate planning, trust and probate law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Pardon me, I get all choked up when I do that. And on this program, we're going to be talking about things that I think may be of particular interest to you if you do not have an advanced health directive. Why, Linda? First of all, what is an advanced health directive?
So an advanced health care directive is a piece of paper. It's a document that enables you to appoint someone as your agent, you being the principal under the advanced health care directive. And so you appoint an agent, and you also have the ability to say what kind of health care, what kind of health matters do you want taken care of? How do you want your physical well-being to be managed in the event of your incapacity?
And I know there are statutory advanced health directives. What is the what comments do you have for persons with respect to the statutory health care directive versus getting a lawyer to prepare it for you? What are the advantages of one over the other?
That's really a good question. So first of all, the bottom line is everyone should have an advanced health care directive. And having a statutory form is certainly better than having nothing at all. A statutory form is one you can get free. You can get from any hospital. You can probably download it. Each state has their own statutory form. And California, you can get it. I imagine you can get one from your own personal physician. But the statutory form is limited. It first of all, doesn't give you the privilege of having someone explain it to you, explain what happens when you appoint an agent, what are the duties and responsibilities of that agent, what kind of health care matters that does that agent have the ability to manage on your behalf. So I'm an attorney, and so my bias perhaps is, yes, I think people should have an advanced health care directive prepared by an attorney. By the way, the health care directives are also within the probate code. So it gives you an idea that within California law recognizes that an advanced health care directive is a legal document. So within an attorney-prepared health care directive, you can appoint an agent to do more than certainly handle your health care matters, but also to handle things like what kind of religious service do I want in the event I'm incapacitated or in the event of my death? Want to have organs donated? What kind of funeral arrangements do I want made? Who's going to take care of my pets? Who has the authority, if I'm in a nursing home or a rehab center, who has the authority to take my personal things, wash my clothes, take control over those things? And also, I think most important is within that healthcare directive, I can give my agent the authority to sue on my behalf. So if the healthcare providers aren't following my instructions, you know, for instance, I might say, I really don't want life support under this particular situation. Mm-hmm. My agent has the authority to sue on my behalf.
Really? To make the wherever you are, follow your directions.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Exactly. When you go for a health care directive, you go to get one, just so that people understand this, because you've mentioned that you can get this on the internet, you can get it from any hospital, etc. Probably most doctor's offices, I suppose, would have a form like this, or am I wrong on that?
I don't know. I think larger clinics would.
Right. So, what is it why we would want to have our own private attorney design one of these for us, whereas the statutory one can't do this? Mm-hmm. You mentioned a number of things that we can do with a healthcare directive. What is the problem with the statutory one? Because I think people should understand this.
Okay. I just don't think it's specific. In fact, I know it's not specific. For instance, I have a client who told me that she really isn't that concerned about pain medication. But first of all, I want you to understand that I feel that no one should be subjected to unnecessary pain. Mm-hmm. So I do put in lots of pain medication provisions in my healthcare.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh my.
So she said that's not that important to her. But what's important to her is that her feet get really cold. So she wants to
socks. I want you to put socks on my feet.
And warm blankets.
Really?
I want lots and lots of warm blankets.
I don't blame her, because in many hospitals, they have it air conditioned to the point where it can be quite uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, especially when you're coming out of surgery.
Oh, sure.
It's freezing.
Oh, sure.
So
why do they do that? I know you're no longer a registered nurse, but you were. Why do they get it so cold? If we come out of the operating room, why do we have to be in the hallway where we're being blown on? It's cold.
Yeah, I have a feeling when you're recovering from surgery, you're cold.
Oh, okay.
And so I think
that's our own problem.
And by the way, yes, I am still a registered nurse. I'm still a registered nurse. But I'm on retired status.
I see.
Right.
I see. Mm-hmm. All right. Where should we keep these advanced health directives?
Okay. First of all, the original health care directive should be kept someplace safe.
Like a safe deposit box, would you say, or not?
I think a safe deposit box is fine. Some people say it's not good because you don't have ready access to it.
I think I would agree with that.
However, a copy is just as legally effective
as the
original. Yeah. So I like to keep the original somewhere safe and have lots of copies.
Mm-hmm.
One copy, I think, should be in your glove compartment,
car, okay.
In your automobile.
Good point. I like that idea. I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good one.
And I think your agent should certainly have a copy of the healthcare directive. Your personal physician should have a copy of the healthcare. Your primary care physician should have a copy of it. If you belong to an HMO, they will scan it, put it right into the system. It'll just be part of your medical record. The other thing is that there is a registry in California. The Secretary of State will register the healthcare directive, and I think I don't have the website right now, but
well,
I think
could
I
Google
can find
that,
it.
I'm sure
you could. And if you register your healthcare directive, you will then get a registration card. And the hospitals, by the way, if you're admitted to the hospital, the mandate for the hospital is to find your agent to determine who, and so they have to make reasonable efforts to find your agent.
I see.
So they either...
Even if you come in and you appear to be totally competent.
No, if you're competent, you don't need a help.
Okay, you're telling us that when you go into the hospital, let's say you're unconscious, or maybe you're suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's, the hospital has a responsibility to try to find your agent.
You're admitted to the emergency room, and you're unconscious.
Okay.
And so
they
have to make reasonable efforts to find your family or someone who can speak on your behalf. So if they find this registration card in your effects, they will call the Secretary of State in order to identify who your agent is.
That's an excellent thing. I had never heard of that.
Right.
That's wonderful, wonderful to know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the agent. Who do we have if we are married? Do we want to appoint our spouse as our agent, or what do we want to do? Mm-hmm. Assuming we have a good relationship still.
Right, right. Most spouses, most of my clients appoint one another as agents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a registered domestic partner, then your registered domestic partner is generally your agent. Make sure you're truly a registered domestic partner. You just haven't registered at work. And
yes.
So
you have to do that through the Secretary of State.
You do.
Yes.
And so so usually it's the spouse who's mm-hmm. the first agent. Mm-hmm. Then if you, people then will, there are lots of other options. Mm-hmm. Usually if they have children, they will mm-hmm. appoint their children as second agents. Good friends. Significant others, and I think a healthcare directive is especially important for someone who doesn't have these people in their lives,
yes.
if they don't have a spouse
yeah.
or a registered domestic partner, because then the question comes up, your parents would be your, logically, legally, your next agent,
mm-hmm.
but which parent should make those healthcare?
And your parents possibly may be elderly, and it wouldn't be perhaps
right.
the most opportune thing to do.
Or siblings, which sibling
yes.
has the right?
Yes.
Which grandchildren have the authority to make end-of-life decisions?
Mm-hmm.
And if people are arguing about this, it fractures a family.
That's not good. Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. I take it from what you were saying, then, it's very important when we appoint an agent in our health care directive to have a second person.
Yes. Always, always have an alternate.
Okay.
Because you and the agent could be in the same accident.
Ah, that's a very, very good point. The I know some people want to donate organs. Is this something also that a health care directive will cover?
Yes. The mm-hmm. health care directive actually gives your agent the authority to make that decision on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in addition, of course, you could indicate it through DMV or whatever that you want to be an organ
yes,
donor.
Yes.
But your agent really is the person who ends up making that decision.
What about, you mentioned pets. Many people have pets. Many people, the pets become nearly like a child to some people, mm-hmm. equivalent to that kind of a feeling. What are the practicalities of a health care directive with your being concerned about your pet or pets?
Mm-hmm. So with the health care directive, you can say that your agent has the authority to take care of your pet.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can always do that with a trust,
mm-hmm.
but people will look at a health care directive if there's an emergency. And if you're in the ER, and if you have a cat at home
yes.
or a dog at home,
sure.
you really want someone to immediately be able to go and take care of that pet.
You know, you mentioned to me as we were, before we went on the program, that you felt any child 18 years of, or older should have a health care directive. Why?
Mm-hmm. And that's because once a child is 18, they're considered adults here mm-hmm. in California.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling, if any of you has an 18-year-old, they're not exactly adults at age 18, although they legally are adults.
Mm-hmm.
So once they're... So I, again, have a... I have lots of stories. A client, 17-year-old son, so mother said, I went to with my son to see his doctor last week. He just turned 18, and the doctor won't let me in the door any longer. So we can prepare a healthcare directive. By the way, healthcare directives are, by law, effective once someone becomes incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
But you can draft them to say that they're effective immediately. So I've done that for a number of 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. They're going away to college. And so we have a healthcare directive, and they, of course, agree to this, mm-hmm. saying that mom and dad have the authority now to be their agent and now have the authority to speak to their doctors. They don't have to wait until the child...
Oh, that's good. All right. Mm-hmm. So if you have a healthcare directive that covers or has language that covers as you've just suggested, that means that the parent can go mm-hmm. in with the 18-year-old or whatever the age may be, 18 or more, into the doctor's office as the doctor is dealing with the child. Is
right.
that right?
Oh, right. And, of course, the child has to agree to that.
Oh, sure.
You know, another thing, we're not always old when we're in accidents. An 8-year-old will get in a motorcycle accident and need someone to make the decisions for him or her.
Yeah, one of the things that bothers me so much when I'm driving on the freeway are these fellows, usually men, who are driving motorcycles right down between the lines of cars. Oh, I just find that just incredible.
Don't you hate that?
They're very scary. And I hope those guys, usually, I've seen very few women doing this, but I hope those fellows have health care directives because I think it's very important they do. What about, I know you want to talk a little bit about a conservatorship and why that is something that you feel is important to talk about in the context of a health care directive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
But before I do that, for those of you who have tuned in the last few minutes, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program primarily focusing at this point on advanced health directives. This is in the estate planning area. My guest is Linda Kramer. She's chair of the Estate Planning Trust and Probate Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She's a member of the board. She's a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. And for those of you who listen to the program live, you will have a chance to ask your question, make a comment, have a chance to talk with Linda Kramer in the second half hour. I think that's when I will invite you to call in. And so for those of you, whether you're in the Bay Area or listening on the Internet, if you have radio on the Internet at www.kalw.org, you'll be able to call in with your question, your comment, etc. Could we come back then to you told me that you feel that if people can, they should do everything they possibly can to avoid a conservatorship. First of all, what is a conservatorship? Mm-hmm. Why is it necessary? Under what circumstances?
Okay, a conservatorship is a court proceeding, and it takes place when an individual needs help, and they no longer have capacity. And someone needs to be in place to either take care of this individual's finances so that their bills continue to be paid, so that their IRA distributions continue to be made. Someone has to be in place if this individual is doing unusual things, hoarding, mm-hmm. or they're a danger to themselves or to someone else. So the court will appoint a conservatorship of the person, which means that conservator has the authority to hire caregivers to make sure that you as the conservatee are safe and protected, you're taking your medication, you're no longer in danger of creating a fire because of the hoarding you're doing in your house, or there's conservatorship of the estate, and that conservator has the authority to manage your finances. Again, make sure your bills are paid.
Do the courts normally appoint a family member as the conservator?
The court would prefer to appoint a family member, mm-hmm. if at all possible. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a priority of who is the family member to be appointed.
Sure.
But if you have a health care directive in place, possibly you won't need to have a conservatorship of the person because you already have appointed mm-hmm. an agent. For me, a conservatorship is kind of the last resort because they're terribly expensive. I have never seen a conservatorship cost less than $12,000.
Where's all the money going?
Well, there are petitions that have to be written. There are court appearances, the court investigators. The court has to appoint somebody an attorney to represent the proposed conservatee, their attorneys representing the proposed conservators. Mm. It's expensive, and I feel humiliating for the whole family because all of a sudden your idiosyncrasies are out there.
You're telling court. It's because in court it's a public matter.
It's a public
matter. Anyone can be there, and it can become embarrassing.
Yes, and it's expensive.
Yeah.
Versus a healthcare director that could cost $300 versus $12,000.
Incredible. Incredible. I think that's very important for people to know.
Right.
What about you mentioned something about there is another form, and correct me on this because I don't practice in the area of estate planning, but there's a power of attorney for finances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can that also be covered by, I guess that cannot be covered or is usually not covered by the Advanced Health Directive, is it?
No, it's a separate document.
Mm-hmm.
A power of attorney for financial matters is totally different. You could appoint the same agent,
mm-hmm.
But a power of attorney for financial matters is just that. It manages the paperwork, the transactions, who has the authority to deal with your insurance carrier, whether it's medical insurance or life insurance or disability insurance,
mm-hmm.
who has the authority to handle your retirement accounts, your pensions, who has the authority to access your bank accounts to manage your investments, who pays the rent for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the agent under the financial power of attorney pays your bills. The agent under your advanced health care directive hires the caregivers to take care of you.
Yes.
So I think it's very important to have coordination between the two of them, because if one of them feels that this caregiver is much too expensive, I really don't want to pay those bills. And on the other hand, your health care directive says you really want the best care available,
sure.
and the best
right.
care that you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to have coordination between those two agents.
Do you think, generally speaking, that it is wise if someone has not done this or they've only done, let's say, one document versus both documents, do you think it's wise that the same person who is the agent on the Advanced Health Directive should also be the agent for the power of attorney for finances?
If all things being equal, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people will say, well, gee, you know, my one daughter, she's great at handling finances, but she's just not going to be strong enough if I'm in the hospital and if I need medical care.
Mm-hmm.
So my other daughter is really much more suitable.
When you say strong enough, what do you mean? What is your concern as a registered nurse
mm-hmm.
with that and an attorney?
So my experience is I might have somebody who's very physically strong, but as soon as they get into the hospital, they fall apart. They crumble. It smells different. I've seen blood. I can't handle dealing with doctors. I really can't handle thinking about mom dying, and I don't want to have any part of making that decision.
Well, that's very important that certainly the person mm-hmm. who is going to set up an advanced health directive talk this out with whomever he or she wants as their agent, isn't it?
Yes, it's extremely important.
You just don't go to a lawyer and say, I want to set this up, and I want to appoint my daughter, I want to appoint my son, or I want to appoint my husband, or whomever, if that person can't take it. You know, frankly, I don't think it's a lot of fun to go to a hospital. And frankly, I don't think it's fun to go to an emergency room because, frankly, my experience has been it's nearly like a circus.
Well, I think you're really in the minority. Everyone loves going to the hospital, Chuck. Everyone wants to go to the ER and wait in line for two or three hours.
It's lots of fun. I mean, I have generally found that the people working in ER are very conscientious, capable people, but if you have to go there, especially on a weekend... That's been my experience. Mm-hmm. It can be just awful. And I'm not going to name the hospital, but I'm thinking of one that's a very major hospital in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like doing it.
No, but having a health care directive really can't help you there. If you've got to go to the ER.
I know, you do. You can't say, I want you to be more gentle with me as you roll my bed down the hallway. I don't want you joggling me. You can always say,
I want warm blankets.
That's right. And usually they're pretty good at that, even without an advanced health directive. You know, we're coming to the end of the statewide version. We have a couple more minutes before we go into the second half hour with people who are listening to us live in the Bay Area, live on the Internet at www.kalw.org. Do you have, in the next minute or so, a couple of thoughts that you might want to communicate to people before we end the half hour?
I think that it's imperative on everyone to put something in writing to say how they want their physical well-being, how they want their health care to be managed. in the event they're no longer able to make mm-hmm. that decision for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the bottom line. And I think I don't care how old you are. So many people think that, well, I'll just die and nothing will happen. I'll just die. But in reality, we don't just die. In reality, medical care...
I'll just die and walk away.
Medical care is so good that we tend to have lots of illnesses almost always we're going to need some sort of assistance.
Do you think there's some value to someone who wants to do what you're talking about, an advanced health directive, to confer with that person's internist or main medical doctor just to have a chat and kind of get some feel, some input from the main medical person? Or do you think that's important at all? Mm-hmm. I mean, for one thing, you're a registered nurse. That's different than most lawyers. Most lawyers who are estate planners have nothing, no background like you do. What comments do you have about that?
Okay. I really respect the medical community. I have a mm-hmm. lot of compassion for them, but I don't think they have the time to actually deal with this subject.
They're on the clock, most
and
of
I've
them.
Actually heard from one physician who said that these healthcare directives are really useless. Nobody really pays attention to them.
Oh, I don't like to hear that.
I don't either. And so that's why I think you need strong language in them because the healthcare provider has a duty mm-hmm. to respect your wishes. And this isn't something...
That's very helpful, yeah. Because I think most of us in today's medical communities, we're dealing with very competent people, but I think they are booked front and back.
They are. And they don't have time to sit down and explain this, unfortunately.
Which is very unfortunate. Very unfortunate, because I think it is something that would be very helpful to them, to a patient, client of an attorney who's going to prepare an advanced health directive. But thank you for your insight into that, because I think it's very important to do so. Well, let me just mention briefly again your suggestion to us. If we're going to have an advanced health directive, that we also want to find out through the Secretary of State's office, and we can Google that, how we might be able to register that, which to me is a very important thing. And then you can get a card and have it on you. So we have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We'll continue on the air for those of you who are listening to us live. It is, it looks like, about 7:27 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program, we've been focusing on estate planning, particularly advanced health directives. If you have a question in that area, or if you have a question in a more general area of estate planning, please feel comfortable to call in. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. My guest is Linda Kramer, who is the chair of the Estate Planning Trust and Probate Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. She's also a member of the board. Her law firm is in Los Altos. For those of you who are not familiar with Los Altos, that's in Santa Clara County. She is a partner with her daughter, whose last name is Raiden. Is it pronounced correctly, Raiden?
It is. Thank
Kramer
you.
Kramer Raiden in Los Altos. And in that, we send this program out to a number of stations in California. That's why I wanted to mention, because I think most people who are not familiar with the Bay Area probably have never even heard of Los Altos, which is a beautiful community, by the way. In any event, I want to give you the number, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And let me mention something to you before we actually take your questions. If you are interested, by the way, in getting one of the pamphlets that the Board of Legal Specialization has available to you, no charge whatsoever, one of the 11 pamphlets on the 11 specialties, Or if you want to find out who your certified specialist may be in your geographic area in the state of California, you can either go to the website, which I'll give you, or you can call the statewide number, which is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. Or you can go to the website, www.californiaspecialist.org. That's all together, no spaces, all lowercase, www.californiaspecialist.org. And also, let me mention to you this, if you are in San Francisco in particular, if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during, of course, normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They'll do their best to find someone who's competent and set up a half an hour consultation. Depending on the county, it could, for half an hour, it could be a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. Ron, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I have a couple of technical questions. They're more legal questions, one on wills and one on trusts, if that would be okay.
Sure. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Regarding living trust, my mother is now incompetent. When she was more competent, she expressed an interest in putting some real property into a living trust. I have power of attorney. Can I put the property into a living trust for her, or what would be the procedure for doing that? And it is a general power of attorney.
Ron, if the power of attorney gives you the authority to transfer real estate, yes, you can. And almost always you can transfer real estate into her trust. I think the problem is a lot of title companies like to see more than just the power of attorney. The law surrounding trust is really well established. The law surrounding powers of attorney is frankly not so well established. And so you may have to prove that your mother is no longer has capacity. You might need an attorney to help you, but yes, your power of attorney should allow you to do that.
Okay. In terms of wills, this is actually perhaps a simple one. Is a how would a holographic will supersede a witnessed will? Does it supersede, or can it supersede a witnessed will, or are there any problems there?
Any will.
And you only need, in a holographic will, you only need you, the person who is preparing the will, you only need to sign it yourself, date and sign it yourself. And it's got to be in all of your own handwriting, does it not?
That's correct. I was going to say it has to be an authentic, holographic will.
You can't have some typing as well as some writing.
That's
okay.
Right. All right. You cannot. So if it's a legitimate holographic will, it's the latest will that controls.
Okay. And the same for a holographic codicil?
Yes. It's the latest document that was signed. Again, if it's a legitimate will, then it will take precedence over any other will that your mother signed. Or anyone signed.
Very good. And by the way, I'm calling from Los Altos, so I have her.
This was a setup, wasn't it, Ron? Ron, I know who you are. This is Ron, one of our great persons who's been a guest on this program and also is usually here for our Call a Lawyer night, Ron Rohde. Ron, thanks very much for calling.
I know nothing about wills and trusts. So
well, most of us.
I appreciate the help.
Yeah, but most of us don't. That's why Linda's here. So thank you for your good questions.
And I don't know Ron.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ron. Nice to talk to you. Ron is a patent copyright attorney.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. We've got Bill. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was wondering, what is the difference between an advanced health care directive and a power of attorney, or do they have to be coinciding.
Mm-hmm. So before, I think it was 2000, 2000, there was a power of attorney for healthcare. But since 2000, I think it was July 2000, now that's been codified in the healthcare decisions law. So I don't know if you're talking about a power of attorney for healthcare or if a power of attorney for finance.
What if I just wanted to have an advance directive that just says, this is what I want done in case I'm incapacitated and not able to make decisions for myself, but I don't have an agent specified? Does that stand?
You can have an advance healthcare directive without appointing an agent. You can just simply say, this is the kind of medical care I want or I don't want. You know, I do want this treatment, I don't want this treatment.
But that's kind of tricky, isn't it?
Well,
you can't, how can you be sure? If you're not aware of what's going on, and you've got no agent there to follow through on your directions, that's seems to me hit and miss.
Yeah, but legally, you can do that.
Sure.
You can have a healthcare directive without appointing an agent. And so then what happens is if you are in the hospital, if an agent has to be appointed, often a third party, an independent third party, the district attorney, who's a very nice guy, but I don't know if I want him to make my end-of-life decisions, or I know that attorneys are often appointed, strangers, to make these end-of-life decisions.
Appointed by whom?
The court.
So there you go. That's the problem, Bill. If you don't have someone who you have appointed in your advanced health directive, then you've got the court getting involved, which is a complication that I think you can try to avoid. You know, my feeling about this, I've been a consumer attorney for a long time. And for those of you who listen to this program, you know I'm a deputy DA for San Mateo County and the Consumer Protection Unit. I truly believe if you have the funds to do some planning, and as Linda said, you know, maybe an advanced health directive prepared by an attorney may only be $300 or something relatively small. You start going into court and you're going to have an attorney to help you. That becomes very expensive. And I really think it's important for people to do some planning ahead of time and you be in control and get a advanced health directive that is done where you sit down with an attorney who is an estate planning attorney and work it out and get in the details that Linda's been talking about.
So are these attorneys county specific? For instance, Linda, where are you located?
I'm in Santa Clara County.
Where are you, Bill?
I'm in Oakland.
You're in Oakland. Okay, Alameda County. My suggestion, Bill, is this. Were you listening to the first half hour of the program?
Yes, but I was online making the phone call.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Giving the
that's a problem. Here, let me give you what I would suggest you do. There are a couple of things that you can do. One is you can contact the Board of Legal Specialization and find out who the certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law is in your county, which is Alameda County. And that number to call would be 415-538-2100. Or you can go to the Board of Legal Specialization's website, which is www.californiaspecialist.org. That's all one word, by the way, no spaces, all lowercase,
okay.
www.californiaspecialist.org. Or if you feel more comfortable, you can contact the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. Tell them you're thinking that you'd like to meet with an attorney who does estate planning, and because you want to get an advanced health directive, and what they will do is they'll find someone for you who's experienced and set up a half-an-hour consultation. And I think in Alameda County, that initial consultation may be probably no more than $35. So there are things that I think you need to look into, and in that, obviously, you're not familiar with how the lawyers go about. This is the way to do it. I hope it's helpful to you.
Yes.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
All right, Eugenia, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Are you there, Eugenia? Or did we bore you to death? I guess that's what we did. All right, Eugenia has gone. Eugenia.
No, I I'm here.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can't, Eugenia, you cannot leave the room when we're talking.
No, I'm here.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Well, then we want you to talk. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Actually, my comment is related to the last caller.
Okay.
I'm a psychologist, and I get a lot of my continuing education credits through a site online that's primarily aimed at physicians. And last week, I took a little training on properly interpreting living wills and avoiding medical errors.
Mm.
And it was a very frightening little thing that I was exposed to. It was based on an article that appeared in the Journal of Emergency Medicine in May of this year.
Yes.
And they did a study with physicians asking them to interpret the living wills and put them into action depending on the situation that a patient came in with. And they discovered that the majority of physicians misinterpreted the living wills. The ones that did the best were the attendings, but even they misinterpreted them 68% of the time.
Let me get Linda Kramer to comment on this, Eugenia, because I think that this is a very important thing that you are bringing up here. We haven't talked about living wills at all, and I'd like her to do that. By the way, since you brought up this topic, I want to let you know that next week we're doing something that I am very impressed with my guest who will be on the air, Dr. Marianne McGuckin. She's a medical expert in infectious disease prevention, and we're going to be talking about preventing medical malpractice, hospital and healthcare associated infections. Different than what you're talking about, but again, something where you as the patient can take, or there are things you can do to take control. So can I get Linda to respond to some of the stuff you brought up? If you turn your radio back up.
Okay.
Eugenia, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. What about living wills?
Okay, Eugenia, a living will is no longer... All a living will used to say was that this is the kind of medical care I want, or this is the... If I'm in a vegetative state, I do not want certain care. That's mm-hmm. all a living will said.
I see.
So an advanced health care directive enables you to appoint an agent. So the agent is the person who intercedes on your behalf with the doctors. The doctors don't have to interpret it. All the agent does, the agent talks to the doctor
okay.
and gets, knowing what your beliefs are, what your what you would want as far as having quality of life, what your religious beliefs are, it's the agent that intercedes on your behalf, who stands in your shoes.
A living will, then, it sounds like, was a very brief type of document.
Living will was years ago, 30 years ago, in we had living wills. And all they said is, this is the medical care I want or I don't want.
And it didn't have, did it have an agent?
Did not have an agent.
Did not have an agent. So it was an ancient, kind of an ancient document.
Right. If you have one, and people still have them, mm-hmm. anything that was prepared prior to 1992 is null and void.
Really?
Right now... Mm-hmm. A power of attorney, an advanced health care directive, continues on forever.
Yes.
But at that time, they were, they had an end.
Ending. So if someone has a living will that is prior to
1992,
it's null and void.
Yes.
So keep that in mind if you have one. Again, this is Your Legal Rights, the number 1415-841-4134. 1415-841-4134. Again, the phone number for the Board of Legal Specialization, should you be looking for a certified specialist in any one of the 11 specialties, is 415-538-2100. If you want to go to the website, it's www.californiaspecialist.org. And by going either way, by phone or on the website, you can find out who the certified specialists are in your area. I know that some of them essentially in different areas, in particular, I know because of the programs I do on bankruptcy, will initially have a no-charge consultation. I can't say that for all of the specialties, frankly, but I do know that at least in the bankruptcy area, that is the case for the initial consultation. All right, let me see who else is up here. I think we've got Jack. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Jack.
So my question was, I was wondering if you guys thought that there's a technology solution that would help make people utilize advanced directives more.
Well, that's really a good question. I'm not a techno wizard. Maybe it's, technology. Estate planning, we're really rather provincial. We still deal with written documents. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything in the cloud that gives people the authority to make decisions for us.
Okay.
So gotcha. the only thing I can suggest, sometimes people, you might want to put this on a, what do you call it, those little things that stick into the side of the computer, the sticks.
Gotcha.
A flash drive.
Flash drive or a computer, mm-hmm. Disk. That's the only solution I have.
I mean, this is not like preparing your income taxes where you can follow something and see whether or not you comply with a certain provision, etc. This is a much more personal thing where you do want to, I think, have a conversation with someone who's knowledgeable and can mm-hmm. help you in figuring out what you really want to put in the document.
You can always check boxes off, but this really is very subjective.
Yeah. This is more a personal thing. Jack, are you a computer nerd?
Yeah, I'm a computer nerd. So that's why I asked.
Yeah.
You should invent it, Jack.
Yeah, well, I'm a startup entrepreneur in the Bay Area.
Oh, are you? Okay.
I actually help run a site called paperwell.com, which is a public resource where people can get free legal documents.
Yeah.
And we recently compiled advanced directives across all 50 states, and we were thinking, okay, how else can we help people? And we've been doing more research in the area. And so one of our ideas was actually, like, we were like, oh, would people find, like, a TurboTax wizard helpful? But, based on your feedback, that sounds like maybe that isn't.
Let me ask you this, Jack. Are you familiar with the NOLO books, N-O-L-O?
Yeah.
Have you read the book that NOLO prepared on estate planning?
I have not yet.
You know you should.
Okay.
You really should, because I'm a great believer in the NOLO books. NOLO, by the way, is not a sponsor or a funder of this program, never has been. However, I've been very close to, at the very beginning of this program, the people who founded NOLO and had many of their authors on the program, and they do wonderful works. And in that, you are talking about trying to do something electronically to help people with certain aspects of estate planning. I think you should find that book. You should probably pick it up in a bookstore. I don't think it's any more than $40 or something. It probably is even less. It's a large paperback, and I think it might give you some ideas that would be helpful. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Yeah, take care. All right, 1-415-841-4134. My guest is Linda Kramer, Chair of the Estate Planning, Trust, and Probate Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She is a member of the board. She's a partner in the Los Altos law firm of Kramer Radin. Your daughter, Ms. Radin, is she also an estate planner?
Yes, she is.
She's
certified as a specialist.
Oh, she is. No kidding. I should have invited her to come here.
Well,
maybe the next time you come, I'll have both of you here. How's that?
That would be fun.
Does she want to compete with you?
No.
No. Okay.
Nope. She's beaten me.
I'm sorry, what?
She has beaten me.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. I hope she didn't hear that, because she's going to take advantage of that. All right, John, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Good evening. My question is concerning special needs trusts. Mm-hmm. I'm a person with AIDS, long-term survivor, and I'm someone is wanting to gift me some money, and I'm already on Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff.
Let me stop you for a moment, John.
Sure.
You say you're thinking about a special needs trust. Do you have AIDS?
Yes.
And you're saying someone wants to give you some money?
Yes.
You know who this person is?
Yes.
Someone close to you?
Yeah, it's a friend.
Okay. Well, the friend wants to give you some money for what purpose?
To help me with my, my life.
Okay. All right, as long as you know this person, you know, I'm
yes.
Because of who I am and because of what I do, I get very suspicious when people are offering others money, and I want people to be very, very cautious about things where you're getting free money. But go ahead, what's your question?
No, this is a friend who is who's very close to me, who just wants, she lives in a different country and wants to make sure that my life is reasonable.
Good.
for the rest of my life.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, me too. And I know I can't receive monies without ruining my Social Security or disability. Unless it's, I believe, in a special needs trust.
Let me get Linda to respond to that, because that's obviously, I think, your question.
Hi, John. So you're on SSI, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so is your friend wanting to put this special needs trust together now or upon her death?
Now. No, it's for me.
Oh, I know. But
oh, yeah,
but what people often do in their trust, they'll say, upon my death, I have a child with special needs, or I have a good friend like John who has special needs, and I don't want him to be disqualified. I want him to continue to get his SSI. So they'll put together a special needs trust. They'll say, upon my death, this money is to be distributed to a special needs trust for John's benefit. So your friend can do that, and your friend, yes.
She wants to do it now, though.
She can
do it now.
She can set up a special needs trust now, but she needs to have this done by an attorney, because if it's set up incorrectly, you will lose your SSI.
John, let me ask you this. What country is she in?
She lives in Mexico.
In Mexico.
So I will actually be setting it up for her.
Sure. Okay. And you will be, where do you live?
In San Francisco.
You're in San Francisco. So you want to get an estate planning attorney to help you do that special needs trust that will be set up in San Francisco. She will need to, of course, sign this, will she not?
Yes, she will. She should probably meet with an attorney.
In Mexico?
She needs an attorney, a U.S. attorney.
Yeah.
Maybe she can cross the border and meet with an attorney here, and she can set this up for you. Because if you set it up, I'm afraid you're going to lose your benefits.
Oh, really? Oh, so he cannot set
right.
it up. You better
right.
be very careful on that,
right.
John. And, you know, my thought on this, John, is this, that in that we have become so technologically adept, most people, I can't say I am necessarily, but most people are very technologically adept. I think there's no reason why your friend in Mexico, if you can find an attorney, and Linda, you stop me if you feel I'm going too far, but if you can find an attorney who is an estate planning attorney who can help you with the setting up of a special needs trust, there's no reason why your friend, in my opinion, John, can't communicate with this attorney by phone.
That's what I would...
Now, Linda, let me see what Linda says about this.
Okay, so she could communicate by phone, but she's going to have to sign it,
sure.
And it's going to have to be notarized.
But
she's got to go to a consulate, U.S. consulate in Mexico.
Okay.
That's really hard.
Is it?
Well,
really?
It would be a lot easier, John. I don't mean to interrupt you, but if she could come to the U.S., it might be easier.
Would she come here?
She does travel to the U.S. quite often, but... typically not California. She goes to New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, wherever she is, she could go to New York and have it set up for you. Because, frankly, I would not set up a trust for someone who I haven't met. I would want to meet with this person.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that this is what she wants and she understands what she's doing when she's transferring money to this trust. I think a good estate planning attorney would want to meet your friend in person in order to do this.
Yeah. Well, she just wanted to give me a check for...
If she gives you a check, you're going to lose your SSI.
Yeah, don't do it. John,
I know.
Before you do, and you know that there's some problems. You knew that before you called tonight, obviously, from what you said. You want to go very cautiously on this and make sure that you understand what the legal potential problems are.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot for calling. A couple of questions. We're getting close to the end of the program. This caller asked for a comment on POLST, P-O-L-S-T forms. Could you talk about that? I mean, I did nearly a whole program on POLST, but would you tell us what that is, please, and comment just a little bit on that?
I'd be happy to. POLST stands for the Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, and it's a bright pink form. Hospital staff, they love it because they can put it on the front of your chart and they won't misplace it because it's right there glaring at them. it's doctors like it because it actually gives your doctor, I feel, it gives your physician the authority to make end-of-life decisions, to make medical decisions. I personally feel that this is a decision that should be made by the family, that you should have a part of making this decision, and I think that the family needs to be involved in deciding when and if life support should be withdrawn or continued. So I have real problems with POLST. I think it's too simple. Mm-hmm. I feel it might put too much control in the hands of healthcare providers. That's my personal opinion.
So you're saying you can still get you can still be protected without having a POLST if you have an advanced health directive?
Yes. Now, the POLST is, again, it's better than nothing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And here's something else, which I think is a very interesting question. When an heir or family member is given financial power of attorney, there is often an implicit conflict of interest due to an heir's desire to conserve money he or she is about to inherit. I love this, but isn't this true with some people?
Of course it's true for some people. You have to choose your agent well. Your agent is the person who has the ability to make these decisions. So, and there's always a possibility that an agent is going to take your money, run off to Tahiti, end life support, inherit all the money.
Sure. Embezzle the money, maybe.
Whatever. So you choose your agent well.
Yeah, so be careful. Be careful on that in terms of what you do. We have about a minute left or so if you have some. I think we've covered everybody, have we not? Elaine, do you have a quick question?
Yes, my 85-year-old father is in the hospital, and he has a little bit of dementia. We don't have a health care directive. Can I get one?
Yes, a little bit of dementia does not mean someone does not have capacity.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, you can still get one. He has to sign it.
No, I mean, he won't sign it.
Oh, he will not? Why not?
Because he's paranoid. He thinks
you're going to steal from him or something like that, right?
Or he thinks once he signs it, he means he's going to die.
Oh, my.
Perhaps. But the doctors there at this hospital said that they would write up whatever I needed to. And I was wondering, should I go in the conservatorship direction?
Let me do this, Elaine. We've just about run out of time.
Yeah.
I think what you need to do, frankly, I think you need to meet with an estate planning attorney and get some direction, really. I think it's important enough to do that.
Okay.
We have run out of time. And frankly, even if we had a lot of time to talk with you, I think you need to sit down with an estate planning attorney and talk about this and find out what you can or cannot do.
Okay.
Please do that.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much
for calling. Linda, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It would be nice to have you come back on the program with your daughter.
Love it.
Yeah, and see have you both talking. And your husband here, the retired doctor, he can watch both of you at the same time, Dr. Kramer. So, Linda Kramer, thank you very much. Chair of the Estate Planning Trust and Probate Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, partner in the Los Altos. I nearly said Los Angeles. Isn't that horrible?
Oh, no. Wrong continent.
Los Altos Law Firm of Kramer Radin. Thank you very much. Finding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about preventing medical malpractice, hospital, and healthcare-associated infections. My guests will be Dr. Marianne McGuckin, a medical expert in infectious disease prevention. I think you will find this very interesting and will empower you if you have to go into a hospital for surgery. Thanks for listening to the program. I'm Chuck Finney.